This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, on the panel tonight, we've got quite a fraught topic, quite an emotional topic as well, all about the right to choose how we die. Now, in South Africa, we have the right to dignified life, but seemingly not dignified death. We saw University of the Western Cape Professor Sean Davison. He's a well-known campaigner for the right to die with dignity, arrested a few months ago. He's been charged now with premeditated murder, and that relates to his assisting a quadriplegic friend to die back in 2013. A 2016 Supreme Court of Appeal judgment did raise questions about whether it will always be a criminal offence to assist another person to end his or her life, but that judgment has been criticised as vague and unsatisfactory. So surely it must be an imperative that either our courts or Parliament develop the common law to provide some certainty and clarity on the matter. Now, in South Africa, we've got a new private members bill. It's been proposed by the Congress of the People, COPE, and it's seeking to have living wills recognised and allow for the terminally ill to refuse medical treatment that could prolong their lives. It's been dubbed the Right to Die Bill, and I'm joined now by Deirdre Carter, the COPE MP who submitted the bill to Parliament. Evening, Deirdre.
Hi, good evening, Michael, to your listeners and the panellists.
And in studio, Neil Kirby, Head of Healthcare and Life Sciences at Worksman's Attorneys. Neil, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
And also on the line, Johan Jacobs, a member of FISA, which is the Fiduciary Institute of Southern Africa, as well as the National Head of Estates and Trusts at Cliffdecker Hofmeyr. Johan, evening.
Good evening.
Now, Deirdre, when my father died this year, I must say that this is a very personal matter. It's very close to my heart, and I'm sure to many South Africans out there. I was really confronted by this question of whether I would have the strength and courage to help him if he wanted to so do, end his life with dignity, if that was his wish. He was a smoker. The last 6 years of his life, he suffered a few heart attacks. They weren't the easiest for him or the family. But what led you to take up this cause and to introduce this bill, which is known as the Draft National Health Amendment Bill?
Well, Michael, you know, it started off with, I nursed my own father to the end with cancer. I was diagnosed with cancer myself 2 years ago, and then on the 2nd of June I lost my brother, you know, and it was just, you know, we see how it goes and we see what happens in the hospitals. And it's not, I've got to say this up front, this bill is not about the right to die, but it's about a living will and for your, you know, to be respected by the family and everyone else, that in the event where you don't want certain treatment. And I have to also just say to you, I'm very pro-life, and that is why I can say today that I'm a survivor.
And I think very easily we get bogged down in labeling, in calling people who are looking for dignified, assisted death as people who are anti-life, and I'd like to get away from that in particular. Neil, when we talk about this dispassionately, we're supposed to be agnostic. When we talk about the Constitution, the Constitution has in it the dignity of life, and in death we don't seem to have that dignity because that choice has been stripped away to a degree.
Well, it's very difficult to cast a particular perspective on this issue through the lens of the law. Sometimes the law can be a bit blunt. Within a constitutional context, which really introduces concepts like Ubuntu and a constitutional democracy and the interaction of rights and obligations as between individuals and the state, there is a rather blunt statement that says we all have the right to life. Now, within that, and if you meld that with the right to dignity, there is a constitutional argument that would recognize that within the context of the right to life, you have the right to choose not to live. And that is something that constitutional lawyers have been debating for a very, very long time. I'm a big proponent of both. I think that if you are able to take forward the issue of a right to life, then part and parcel of that, when you meld it with the right to dignity, is the right to make decisions concerning the end of your life as well.
When we look at it in law, what is the current application of our law when it comes to assisted dying? What's the current legal position in South Africa? Can you go to jail if you try to commit suicide and fail?
Well, if you try to commit suicide and you fail, then there's no offence in that. There obviously may be consequences surrounding whatever insurance policies you may have or medical scheme cover for that matter.
Sure.
But if you are assisted by someone, that someone could certainly expose themselves to common law crimes, including murder.
That seems to be illogical, though. So I can take my own life, but I can't enlist the help of someone else to take my life.
That is correct. I think that's why I'm saying the law's a little blunt on this issue. You know, it's not, there's case law. We do have common law that has developed the area of assisted suicide to a degree that one is able to argue, albeit incredibly in an incredibly nuanced fashion, as to whether or not a court should condone somebody assisting somebody else to die. We have case law to that degree, but it's all so very distinguishable, which is why I think that a legislative amendment or the introduction of a statutory position, and I certainly accept that it's not as direct as the right to die, but rather the recognition of a living will, which I think is an incredibly important step in this process, is probably the right way to go here.
And Johan, talk to me about the living will component, which is at least one step in that direction, and how this bill would move us forward from where we are currently.
Well, it's interesting that one should actually put this in perspective, in that people have been grappling with these problems, and specifically the South African legislature and the Law Commission for some years. And that there was a fairly comprehensive discussion paper which culminated in a draft bill. But ultimately, the recommendation of the commission, well, in fact, the recommendation of the commission was such that it promoted the concept of an advance health directive or a living will, but stopped short of what is known as active euthanasia or involuntary euthanasia. The proposals in this current bill are a major step forward, because it does cut out some of the ambiguity and uncertainty that is in the National Health Act at the moment, where there is some reference or allusion to a living will, but it's rather ambiguous, and people don't have certainty, and especially the health practitioners. So the idea of an advance health directive, which can take two forms. One is a durable power of attorney, where you appoint an agent who will make these decisions for you as to withholding of certain treatment, and the other one is a living will, a bit of a anomaly to refer to such a document as a living will, but nonetheless that you stipulate your wishes with regard to how and what type of treatment you want to be withheld. So that is the general gist of it.
It does sound like something of a misnomer. Deirdre, how will this provide certainty on that front that my wishes are then taken forward and respected in the event that I'm left incapacitated and unable to relay that sort of consent in the unfortunate circumstances that I'm left incapacitated?
Well, you know, Michael, I first want to just go back to just basically say to you that currently Chapter 2 of the National Health Act, as well as Section 6 of the Act, provides for the right of the user to refuse health services. So Section 7 provides that a health service may not be provided to a user without that user's informed consent. But very interestingly, in a judgment on the 6th of December 2016 in the Supreme Court of Appeals, in the Sampson Ford case, a full bench of judges stated that a person may refuse treatment that would otherwise prolong life, but medical treatment without the patient's consent would be regarded as an assault, so that patient is always entitled to refuse medical treatment. Now, currently, the Health Act says that you can indeed refuse treatment, but it is very silent on what happens in the event when you can no longer talk for yourself. So, you know, one can argue that the legislative framework doesn't have to provide for the use of bonds by red states, but what we need to do is make explicit what is implicit and give it the legal recognition that it requires. Now, the, you know, the next step is going to, well, the, you know, what a person would do is you would then say you can either, you know, the way that a person would look, it is going to be your personal choice. Okay, you can complete it and you will inform your family or a friend, or if you're an old age home, if you see your carer, for example, you say that I do have a living will. But you're also going to get to a stage where you cannot force, you will not be able to force a doctor, okay? But then in your living will, you actually say that in the event that my doctor does not want to stop my treatment, in that event, then please refer me to a different doctor. So it's going to be absolutely, I mean, it would be a patient's choice. It's not that this law is going to force you to do it. But that would definitely not only to our patients, but also to, for example, the medical practitioners, just give them that sort of, that unnecessary fear for adverse legal consequences, you know, would be something of a path if it's made more clear.
Because I do see in response doctors referencing the Hippocratic Oath and also the Minister of Health comments. Neil, maybe you can come in on this. He, when comments were sought on the bill, has said that withholding and withdrawing life-sustaining treatment is a decision taken by the treating doctor and must only be based on his or her clinical evaluation and not on anybody's request. What do you make of that?
I think that's a bit old-fashioned. The National Health Act certainly has taken health law to a point where the patient has more control about what it is that he or she wishes to receive as treatment. It recognizes that fact expressly. You as the patient are able to consent or not consent to the treatment that is being provided to you. At no point can a doctor go beyond the mandate provided by that informed consent. And I do agree that there have been issues introduced through the ambiguity of the language where, and it happens at the most severe and critical times where patients lapse into coma or are unable to communicate their wishes because of a medical treatment, and family and healthcare providers are left guessing as to what to do next. And the very next option is prolonged life, irrespective of quality.
And Deirdre, come in. Yes,
Michael, if I can come in there, please, man. You know what? I must say to you, it was actually a reply to a question that I've asked the minister. And you know, I've got to say to you, his reply was totally misguided. It contradicts the National Health Act. It fails to respect the rights enshrined in the Bill of Rights. It disrespects basic ethical principles, you know, self-determination, respect and dignity. It contradicts the Supreme Court of Appeal judgment on the 16th of December 2006. And I've just got to say, you know, after that, I have tried on more than one occasion, and even next to the minister, tried to meet with him personally to say to him, please respond, I need to meet with you. But he, you know, he is just totally misguided on and contradicting, you know, the Bill and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights and all of that.
So, Deirdre, as we wrap up here, where does it go from here? When are you tabling this bill?
Okay, well, you know, I think I've got to just maybe also just let you know, we've had, if we look at the unprecedented public interest and support, I think it's like the second, third biggest bill ever. We've had 11,420 representations, of which 77% were absolutely in favour. But from that process, we actually had some heart-wrenching stories, and we also took all of those submissions, and we are busy with the final draft is now, we finalised the final draft actually today, where we're incorporating some of the submissions, and one of the things that we're incorporating is organ donation. That was something that, you know, a lot of times I might say, listen, I want to donate my, I want to be an organ donor, but the family might then say, no, you know, we don't want to do it. So we've actually incorporated that section in as well. The next process is going to be that it will now be referred to the Committee of Health, and from valve, and from there it will be re-advertised in the government gazette again, and we'll go through a public participation process, and hopefully we will be able to have it enacted before the election in 2019.
Deirdre, thank you very much. Deirdre Carter, COPE MP, shedding some more light on a very interesting area, an intersection of the law, philosophy, and some very important questions. Difficult conversations to have. I don't think as a society we really do very well at talking about palliative care and end-of-life issues. But that's an issue for an entirely another day as we run out of time. Thanks for tuning in to Classic Business. Many thanks to producer Ruan Yuster and sound engineers Mdutlele and Mataba Taba Radebe down in Cape Town. Sylvia A. up next in the lounge for our Cape Town listeners. And in Gauteng, the world's most beautiful music in the company of the always sultry Carolyn Stain and her superb classic cocktail hour. Just an hour tonight, mind you, until Richard Koch then takes over with his full works. Till tomorrow, good night.